We do forensic medical exams for children where there is a suspicion of child abuse or neglect. And we also do counseling for child victims, siblings of child victims, and non-offending caregivers.
You mentioned the expert testimony that you and some of your colleagues give. How often does that come up? How often do you have to do that?
I physically end up in court about once or twice a month.
What is that like for you?
It was scary the first few times I did it. But all it is teaching. As an expert witness, my job is to explain what the medical findings are and to explain what my opinion is and why that's my opinion. And so all I'm doing really is teaching the judge, the jury, the people in the courtroom about what the child's findings were and what the child's findings mean.
Would I be right to say that you and your colleagues at the CHIP Center, you see some of the results, some of the ramifications of the sex trafficking that's so common along I-20?
We do. And we have for a long time. We just didn't call it human trafficking.
What was it called?
Just plain old child abuse. For many years, we've seen kids who are trafficked for sex by often their family members or a neighbor or a friend. The thing about human trafficking is it's an umbrella term, and it encompasses a large number of types of selling people for either labor or for sex. And we've seen it for a very long time. We've just become more aware of rings and the effects of being along the I-20 corridor.
Is there more of it now, or are we just more aware of it now?
That's a hard question to answer because it would require knowing numbers. And when it comes to finding out what the numbers actually are, it's really challenging. Any numbers that you see with regard to human trafficking are going to be reflective of cases that are found out, investigated, and prosecuted. And often the numbers sharing between the state and federal side are not complete. And so that's actually one of the big challenges that we're working on in Alabama with making sure that we have numbers so that we know how big the problem is and we can obtain funding for it.
Without being too graphic, what are some of the specific results of this trafficking, of this trade that you see at the CHIP Center?
Human trafficking, when it comes to children, at its essence, it's child abuse. And so the effects that we see are the same ones that we see with child abuse. And there are a variety of effects that we know that happen downstream, from depression, from difficulty in school, substance abuse, mental health issues, a variety of problems downstream that happen. Because, again, it's child abuse. It's just a different form that takes a bigger, larger, more societal push to happen.
With certain types of child abuse, I guess there is more stigma, more discomfort with facing it directly. Is that part of the problem here?
Child sexual abuse is something that I think our society is much more comfortable talking about now than when we really started talking about it in the 1970s and 1980s. It's something that people are much more aware of. And I think you can see that reflected in laws in our state. For example, with Aaron's Law that was passed in 2015, which mandates that there is prevention for child abuse within the school systems, that to me is a statement that our society is willing to talk about a very difficult problem and do what we need to do to protect our children.
You mentioned that some of these young people are actually branded. Is that right?
That does happen, yes, that children, boys and girls, because it's both boys and girls that this happens to, may be tattooed or marked in some other way by the pimp that is selling them for sex. That certainly happens.
Do you have any advice for parents or just for citizens out there in the world?
I think the biggest thing is to teach your child to protect themselves. Help your child develop a good sense of self-esteem. Be aware of the dangers that are on the internet. The internet is a wonderful thing. It is a wonderful tool that we can get so much from. But children need to know how to behave safely on the internet. And that is key because that is one of the ways where some people are induced into trafficking situations.
You see that fairly frequently?
Yes, where somebody is lured by somebody on social media to meet with them and then is sexually abused. Unfortunately, that is something we see fairly frequently. But when your child has an iPad, has a phone, those are all opportunities. Those are all opportunities to talk about how to be safe online. And if you weave it into normal conversation, so it becomes a two-way conversation between you and your child, that normalizes the conversation, makes it more likely they'll come to you and that they'll listen to you.
Okay, you've got 30 seconds to talk to the whole community about human trafficking and what you see at the CHIP Center. What do you tell them?
When I go out of our office suite and I tell our office manager that I'm off to talk about human trafficking or have a meeting, it used to be that my office manager would say to me, "Is that really real? Does that really happen in our community?" And she doesn't ask me anymore because we've had a number of conversations about the fact that it's pervasive and unseen. One of the problems with trafficking is that people that are being trafficked for sex, they are being victimized in a very hidden way. The numbers of parts of the of society that don't have anything to do to crime that will see you if you are being trafficked are pretty limited. The medical profession, education, hospitality. It's something that's hidden from us, but it's something that we need to become more aware of. And especially we need to become aware of it when it comes to teaching and protecting our children.
You mentioned before that agencies don't always share information about this. I mean, in your experience, is that getting better or is that getting worse?
I think we are getting much better at sharing, and there are a few reasons for that. One is that we have the State Human Trafficking Task Force. Each of the three federal districts within the state have a trafficking task force as well, and those are well attended by a variety of representatives from different agencies that provide a variety of different kinds of services. It is wonderful that there are awareness events out there, that there are organizations that provide counseling or shelter, but we do all need to communicate because this is the type of problem that we aren't going to fix with only a law enforcement and prosecutorial approach. Really, it needs a public health approach, which is based on prevention, identification of risk factors, treating it as a disease, and not only prosecuting, but also preventing and working on provision of services for victims.
You mentioned identification of risk factors. What are some of those risk factors?
There are quite a few of them. And actually, one of the biggest ones is having been physically or sexually abused as a child. Substance abuse, mental health problems, school problems, children with developmental delays and learning problems. Domestic violence in the home would be another risk factor. Also, kids that are lesbian, gay, bisexual, or trans, that is also a very large risk factor. The last one that I would mention is homelessness. We know that it is very common for kids that are homeless to have been trafficked for sex. The numbers that we have say about 1 in 10. And they're being approached by a trafficker, happens very frequently, very soon, after they become homeless. And so that's something that is a big risk factor that we need to work on as well.
1 in 10 refers to the percentage of homeless children who end up being trafficked?
That's correct.
Wow. Okay. So you do forensic exams on kids who have been abused in these various ways. You see some pretty ugly and probably at times, I would guess, depressing things. Why do you do this?
I got into it because of good mentorship. When I was a resident, I had a couple of cases that I was just fascinated by. And our child abuse pediatrician had just finished fellowship and was in her first attending position. And she has been a wonderful mentor and is a mentor for me to this day. I have a really great job. I do see children that are injured, sometimes injured terribly, but I get to see really wonderful things too. When I follow kids up from the hospital, for example, I usually follow them up in a couple of weeks. And often we go from a child who is injured, admitted to the hospital, to a child who is running around, eating snacks, playing and squealing. it's really, really gratifying. It's an amazing thing to be able to be a part of. The second thing I would say about that is there is something amazing about having the opportunity simply to be with people when they are in a stressful crisis situation. And that's something that I'm very blessed to be able to do. And being supportive to a family and helping them in the small way that I can as a medical provider, that's a really gratifying part of my job.